Okay. Appears to be 1 minute before afternoon, so I'll say this morning. Kastner against Astru, 11-1166. Mr. Yoakum?
May it please the Court. My name is Eric Yoakum, and this case came to the Court of Appeals as a result of the District Court District Court's affirmance of the Commissioner of Social Security's unfavorable hearing decision. I believe the issues are whether or not the ALJ's finding regarding the listing of impairments, whether or not Mr. Kastner's problems met or equaled the listing, whether that's supported by substantial evidence, and also whether her credibility determinations and her resulting RFC determinations were supported by substantial evidence, and also whether or not the testimony of the vocational expert was reliable. And I guess underlying all that, whether or not the ALJ built a logical bridge from the evidence to her conclusion.
So I would like you to start by focusing on listing 1.04 capital A, because it seems to me your theory is one in which it really doesn't make any difference how mild somebody's impairment of range of motion is. As long as there's some detectable limitation, that's enough for the listing. Is that correct?
That's part of it, Your Honor. The listing itself and the introductory section to the listing doesn't specify any requirement of a certain amount of limitation of motion.
But then half the country would be on Social Security.
Judge Rover says half the country would be on Social Security in that case.
Well, that is, I can see where you're coming from, but if you read the listing and the introductory section to the listing, it doesn't specify a specified amount. And also in the record at 228 is Dr. Butler's findings of limitation of motion, and he found 45 degrees of flexion in the back, and the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons normal for that is 90. So I think there was fairly significant limitation of motion. That's a finding that wasn't mentioned by the other side, the commissioner, in its brief.
I thought that what the record showed was his range of motion of the lower back extension was 5 degrees, flexion at the hips 90 degrees, and lumbar flexion 45. But 90-degree hip flexion is really considered just a mild impairment.
Yeah, normal would be 100, but it's the other two that are significant.
The other two.
The flexion in his back, with normal being 90, and should have the also.
But he primarily has a cervical level
that's
problem, not a lumbar.
That is true, even though the both Dr. Butler and the consultative examiner, Dr. Hall, and Dr. Crawford, another examining physician, they all found positive straight leg raising. But you're right, his main problem is in the cervical spine. And the diagnosis of myelopathy, which was only mentioned once by the ALJ, and myoradiculopathy noted by his treating neurosurgeon show that, and the sources cited in my brief on page 17 show that one of the consequences of that type of cervical spinal narrowing or stenosis is difficulty walking. And that's why he's got the clonus in his legs. He's got the hyperreflexia and the hypersensitivity. And in his testimony, and she did note once that he testified he drug his leg, but didn't say anything about his testimony about his loss of balance. And also the one instance on, I think on record page 20, where she says he could walk two blocks. Well, if you read the report, it was two blocks on a rough, not on a smooth, on a level surface, whereas the listing requires that, or one of the examples of ineffective ambulation is, can you walk a block at a normal pace on a rough or uneven surface? So I think there's plenty of, with the ALJ failing to mention the myelopathy, certainly from his treating neurosurgeon. She didn't mention that he said that once. And also, she didn't mention the clonus or the hyperreflexia.
She mentioned the clonus, for sure. I mean, I'm just wondering, some of these things are synonyms for each other, and some of them are just, you know, if you have one thing, then there's a consequence, as you just said, of another thing. So, in lay terms, I'm not sure the ALJ did overlook so much.
Well, I think she did, because really the clonus is one thing, the hyperreflexia is one thing, and the hypersensitivity is another. And also the myelopathy itself and the myeloradiculopathy terms.
But these listings are supposed to identify things that are across the board so significant that we're willing to say as a general rule that these people can't work. But I'm not sure that what you're describing really meets the intent of the listings, because yes, he's somebody, and I'm just looking at the definition of 1.04a, who has a disorder of the spine because he's got degenerative disc disease and he's had, you know, these fusions.
Yeah, degenerative disc disease, Your Honor. He's got spinal stenosis.
Right, which is the narrowing. I understand what that is.
That's what leads to the myelopathy and the clonus and the hyperreflexia and the hypersensitivity.
All right, spinal stenosis resulting compromise of a nerve or the spinal cord. But then it's where is the motor law? You know, where is it? I come back to this idea, you know, is it no matter how trivial some little tiny motor loss, or is there some, and who has the burden to decide that? Should we in any way defer to the Social Security Administration for the degree of severity?
The difficulty is that the ALJ didn't mention those terms. So, and I think there are several cases that say, sure, if the ALJ had dealt with those and discounted them for some reason, then that would be fine. But a failure to even mention them is pretty significant and shows that she didn't actually, or you're not able to trace her reasoning regarding.
What should we make of the fact that a patient withdraws from a particular doctor's care on his attorney's advice? I mean, should people be relying on their attorney? Wait, let me finish, please. To make decisions about what medical treatment they should receive, couldn't that be viewed as evidence of an attempt to manipulate evidence?
I don't believe so in this instance, Your Honor, because as it's clear from Dr. Chow's records, there was this dispute between the workers' compensation carrier and Mr. Kastner's health insurance carrier. So it may have a little bit of bearing, but I think he was trying to get the workers' compensation carrier to pay for it, because it's his testimony that it happened, or it's in the record that it happened at work. And Dr. Chow noted in his first note at, I think, record 288, that, not 288, it's 238, I think. But basically he noted that he was at work and he was pushing on a 400-pound refrigerator and he felt a pop in his neck. So I think I can see where you're coming from, but I don't think that in this situation, with the battle between the health insurance carrier and the workers' compensation carrier, I think Mr. Kastner was just trying to do what his workers' compensation attorney felt was appropriate at that time. And it's not really clear, because Dr. Chow, in record 256, I believe, says that he needs to go back and see that doctor. And what happened is that the workers' compensation carrier denied the coverage, so he went to his health insurance, and basically all that battle back and forth between the insurance carriers resulted in over a year and a half delay in Mr. Kastner getting his first fusion.
Yeah.
And basically I think that, and another thing that is fairly significant in this case is that delay. In my brief, I cited some authorities that say that prognosis is better for people who get early treatment, and that the longer you go, the worse things are going to be. And even Dr. Chow, in his first note, said he needs to have surgery right away, and that he didn't guarantee that anything was going to improve because of it. But, and that's another thing that the ALJ failed to mention, is that Dr. Chow basically said, due to the increased signal within the cord, he may have problems with myelopathy even after the surgery. And also, the ALJ and the commissioner both kind of point to a few instances where he was a little bit better. And they say, well, that means he was all better after his surgery. Well, that raises the issue of if he was so much better after the first surgery, why did he have the second one? And also, the commissioner admits that the ALJ failed to mention the last three notes of Dr. Chow showing that he had
continuing pain, yes.
Continuing pain, and not only just continuing pain, but neuropathic pain, which has been noted to be associated with injuries to the spinal cord and is difficult to treat. And it's one of the most common types of pain that results from spinal cord injuries. So I think all the ALJ's failure to even mention any of that reflects or shows that her determination of, at step three, the meets or equals, was faulty, and also her RSC determination was
okay,
faulty.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Yocum. That will be fine. Mr. Guerin.
May it please the court, Mr. Yocum. I'd like to start off by just pointing out, obviously, the ALJ did not find that Mr. Kastner had no pain. He found that he had very severe impairments that limited him in significant ways in his ability to work. Mr. Kastner alleged that he could not return to his past work, and the ALJ agreed with that. He also alleged, however, that he couldn't return to any other work, and the ALJ did not agree with that.
But you're jumping ahead beyond the listings. The listings issue comes at step three.
Yes, Your Honor.
We don't get to RFC and past work and other work in the economy until we get to four and five. And I continue to be very interested in listing 1.04A because it looks like it describes Mr. Kastner to me. And I'm not sure why it was an error, especially since the ALJ doesn't seem to have given or explained why Dr. Chow's opinion wasn't given more weight, and why the ALJ doesn't mention symptoms such as the clonus, which are evidence of abnormal reflexes.
Your Honor, I have not seen Mr. Kastner point to any actual limitations caused by the clonus.
You don't have to. If you meet a listing, if you satisfy the criteria set out in the listing, we don't get into that more finely graded inquiry about what you can really do. I might say on the side, it doesn't seem to me like Mr. Kastner is the picture of health, but frankly, just looking at that's the point of the listings. They describe these things, and it seems to me he's shown that he has a disorder of the spine. There's this long list of for instances that includes spinal stenosis and degenerative disc disease, among other things, resulting in a compromise of a nerve root, including the cauda equina or the spinal cord, along with evidence of neuroanatomic distribution of pain limitations, et cetera, et cetera. You probably know what it says as well as I do. And I don't know which base you think he didn't touch, because it seems to me there's evidence of all of those things. And if the ALJ was not persuaded by Dr. Chow in some fashion, or if the ALJ thought that the clonus was not meaningful, it's an abnormal reflex. I mean, that beats a certain number of times a minute. It's a problem. So why doesn't he meet 1.04A, and why doesn't that mean we don't even get to questions steps 4 and 5?
As an aside, I believe that clonus is considered abnormal if there are 5 beats or more, and I believe that Mr. Kastner had 3 to 4 beats.
But the ALJ doesn't address it at all.
Yes, the greater point, Your Honor, I agree that Mr. Kastner does, in fact, satisfy some of the requirements of listing 104A.
What does he not satisfy, in your view?
Well, as we discussed in our brief, the ALJ said that he did not satisfy the limitation of motion as anticipated by the listing.
Wasn't there evidence from Dr. Butler and even from Dr. Reiners, the state agency physician, that Kastner's range of motion was limited?
Dr. Butler, as we mentioned in our brief, Dr. Hall said that the limitation was pain.
Yeah, but see, the problem is ALJ didn't discuss this evidence and explain why it was discounted. That's the problem. So we know what he put up, that Butler and Reiners said his range of motion was limited. We know, that the agency said, well, no. The problem is the ALJ doesn't explain why she didn't credit this testimony, why it wasn't meaningful, whatever, or why she said, I'm not going to take it into account. I'm going to rely on the other docs.
It probably would have been preferable for her to provide more detail.
Well, yeah.
But she did say that it didn't satisfy that as anticipated by the listing.
But that's not enough as anticipated
right.
by the listing. That's not specific enough as an explanation.
Especially given the fact that listing 1.04A has changed over time, and it used to require a certain significance, and it doesn't anymore. So that seems to me especially important for the ALJ to explain how much is she talking about? What does she think as contemplated means?
Well, she certainly didn't quantify it, Your Honor.
And isn't
and
that
there's no
fatal?
Indication. Well, even if it were regarded, if that point were regarded as fatal, the other issue that you mentioned, Judge Wood, is the issue of motor loss, which the ALJ didn't, as Mr. Kastner points out, the ALJ didn't specifically address that as a reason for not meeting this listing, but she did point out that Mr. Kastner had full strength. And in fact, if you review the record over and over from...
What do you mean full strength, though? There's some testimony from some doctors that in some parts of his body he has full strength, but then there are other places, for example, the August 2006 exam, even the government concedes it shows a limited range of motion. I don't know what full strength
there's
is.
There's a slightly decreased strength in the right arm.
Four slash five, right?
Right, 4/5. That's an.
But that's not a linear scale, as I understand it. It's a scale that's functionally determined. How hard can you push against gravity? How hard can you push with gravity?
That's my understanding, too, Your Honor. Throughout the, before that, in June 2006, he was noted to have 5/5 strength in both of his upper and lower extremities. And
how do you correlate the strength and the pain?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I said, suppose he has full strength in his left arm, but he's in excruciating pain every time he does something with that arm. I'm just saying hypothetically. I mean, how do you interrelate pain and strength?
I think that...
Same thing.
I don't think that the listing, since we're looking at it in those terms, I don't think that the listing itself addresses whether or not the individual is in pain when he exerts his strength. So I'm not sure how I would address that. It's possible.
Move his neck, or the May 2005 report indicates, doctors write in funny ways, Kastner prefers not to make his neck move more than approximately 5 degrees in flexion and extension, right and left rotation, right and left side bending. And then there are other indications of limited range of motion. Isn't that what the listing's looking for? Alternative?
Yes, the listing specifies range of motion and, in addition, motor loss. I don't think that the range of motion that we see in this case, and in particular the motor loss, satisfies the kind of severity that the listing contemplates.
But I am dying to know, where is your legal source for this kind of severity? It sounds so vague. I don't know that there's a Social Security ruling that explains that. I don't know if there's a court decision interpreting the regulations. I mean, it can't just be seat of the pants. What do we think today and what does somebody think tomorrow? And we get no explanation.
I agree with you, Honor, and I am not aware of a definition of how to interpret the range of motion or the weakness. Again, I would point out that the evidence in the case repeatedly showed strong arm strength, very good. There are many references to that that I think would not satisfy the listing of.
Well, I understand that's your
regardless
argument. So
don't. Regardless of what it may be.
Could you repeat that, Alana?
Regardless of what it may be. Regardless of what the range of motion is.
Yeah, I think she's asking you, do you think it doesn't satisfy the listing regardless of what the actual limitation may be?
I'm sorry. The range of motion as recorded by Dr. Butler, or is that what you're referring to? I don't think that the listing, clearly the listing does not give a range of motion. It doesn't say 10% or 20%.
Okay. Anything further, Judge Rovner?
No.
We would ask the...
I shouldn't have bothered you with that.
Thank you. We would ask the court to affirm the commissioner.
Thank you.
Okay. Your time ran out, Mr. Yocum, but just if you have one concluding sentence, you may tell us.
Consultant examiner Dr. Hall, he found that Mr. Kastner had difficulty arising from the squatting position and couldn't really get up normally with that. And under the listing, the introductory part to the listing, that's an example of weakness.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.